Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, folks, before we talk to Ben Cohen from The Banter, listen to this quick word from ZipRecruiter.
2020, a new year. It's the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/begin makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to more than 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes and finds people with right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlighting the top candidates so you never miss a great match. It's so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/begin. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEGIN. ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, January 8, 2020, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Zeska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guest today is one of my favorite people, and I say that not just because he's been my editor at The Banter since 2012. Today we're chatting with the great Ben Cohen about Trump and Iran, as well as Facebook's horrendousness and the status of digital publishing in the age of social media. You can follow Ben Cohen on Twitter at TheDailyBanter. And through the Banter newsletter at thebanter.substack.com. Links in the description. And if you like what you hear, please consider supporting this show by subscribing to our bonus content at bobzeskashow.com. All right, get ready. Let's catch up with my friend, the great Ben Cohen.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, there he is. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thanks, Bob. Sorry about the delay on this. I had to go through about a 25 million verification
hey,
process
look,
to get on.
I know. The Skype update process is, it seems like every time I open up Skype, it's got to update.
Right. And then I put in the password and it says, that's not your password. And anyway, I'm here. Sorry. My
Wonderful.
Apologies.
Well, you know, I'm so grateful that you've decided to come on today because I originally had Rude Pundit scheduled for today. So Rude was going to be on and we were going to talk about all of this going on with Iran. And then Rude couldn't make it. So then I got Charles Johnson from Little Green Footballs. Then he couldn't make it. Then I tried to get Buzz and Buzz was busy writing his copy for tomorrow's Buzz Burbank News and Comment. And so that's how we're here together today, Ben Cohen. So thank you.
No worries.
Okay, so you know, I want to talk with you about a few things today, but let's start with the obvious topic. What's your take? What's your reaction on the events of the past couple of days?
Well, I mean, I think we've come to learn over the past 3 years to expect the unexpected and to expect disaster at every turn imaginable. So it sadly wasn't surprising at all. What was that? You know, what did he say? Your shocked but not surprised, or is it the other way around? I forget.
Well, yes, it's interchangeable. Either one of those things.
Interchangeable. Yeah. Interchangeable. I mean, you know, it's again another completely uncalled for disaster.
Yeah.
Uncalled for chaos. Absolutely no. There was absolutely no reason for this whatsoever.
No, not at all.
It was basically just another kind of another episode of the Mad King. creating absolute pandemonium wherever he goes. Whatever he does, you can expect disaster. You can expect chaos.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's any logic to that. I don't think there is logic to it.
No, not of course not. What he's doing here, I wrote about this for Salon yesterday, and it's something that we saw with North Korea in 2017, where he thought, okay, look, if I act like a crazy person, if I act like an unhinged maniac who's ready to launch nuclear weapons at the drop of a hat, maybe they'll get scared enough of me to acquiesce to everything I want. So what ends up happening is he gets a bunch of meetings with Kim Jong-un, achieves nothing, elevates Kim Jong-un, reduces the integrity of the United States at the same time by elevating this murderous dictator. And then ultimately, Kim Jong-un is back to doing what he was doing before. So mission accomplished. Great job. Great job, yeah. Donald Trump.
Absolutely nothing accomplished. And I think It's the same thing with Iran. You know, we covered this in the banter with the North Korea episode where I think I wrote a piece about he entered negotiations with North Korea not understanding what he was negotiating or what he had to negotiate with. So he made all these concessions and made all these offers, and everybody around him after it was done basically said, yeah, actually we're not going to do that. because he didn't know, he had no idea what he could offer and what he couldn't offer.
Yeah.
So I think he thinks maybe there's going to be some grand bargaining with Iran. But given he doesn't read, doesn't know anything about Iran, probably couldn't spot it on a map, has no understanding of the history of the country, of the region. Mm. He's going to enter negotiations with a country, a very, very sophisticated country, in fact, in many, many ways. It's that they're a highly sophisticated country, highly sophisticated culture. Yeah. And the leadership, I'm not a fan of the Iranians or think they're good guys, the leadership, but they're not stupid.
And I think we've seen that play out over the last 12, 24 hours, because what they did with last night's missile strike is they offered up Trump a way to wiggle out of all of this, to save face and to walk away, because they could have inflicted mass casualties if they wanted to. I mean, they were, in fact, because we took out Qasem Soleimani, they could have done something that was proportionate to that. They could have murdered one of our officials using whatever their version, whatever weapon they choose. And instead, they didn't do that. Instead, they hit air bases in a way that killed nobody. And that sends Donald Trump the signal that we're escalating because we have no choice but to escalate, but we're escalating in a nonviolent way. Ultimately, we're escalating in a way that doesn't amount to any deaths. So that gives you an opportunity to say, well, no one was killed. And because no one was killed, we're backing down. And that appears to be the message that Trump, I hesitate to say Trump got that message, because Trump didn't get that message. Someone who's very smart inside his administration, one of his advisors or several of his advisors, said to him, this is language. Iran sent you a message with this missile strike last night. Take the message. Take it for what it is, and let's de-escalate this. And that appears to be what he's done. But here's something. I wrote this for the banter, and this is going to be in my piece for later today or tomorrow, Ben. Here's a preview of what I wrote in this piece. Yes, Trump managed to avoid war by leading us to the very brink of it. While ultimately avoiding war, I don't think this clusterfuck ought to be considered a win, and here's why. The most positive outcome we can hope for is a considerably worse relationship with Iran than we had before Trump. It's not even a lateral move. It's a giant step backward. The very best case scenario in all of this is another agreement that's far weaker than the old Iran deal at best. And we only needed to bungle our way into a military showdown against a well-equipped nation that's larger and more powerful than Iraq. Good job, Donald Trump. Very well done.
absolutely perfect. Like that, perfectly encapsulated the kind of idiocy of this move that he's done.
Yeah.
I think that it's also a massive recruiting tool for ISIS and for every other person in the Middle East who hates America.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're like, okay, you know, look at what the Americans have done. Right. They have basically made the situation in the Middle East or in Iran and Syria worse. Right. He's pulled out of Syria. He's allowing ISIS to kind of regain a foothold in Syria.
Mm.
And then now he's hit the Iranians. He's now created massive resentment in Iran towards the United States, more so than was before.
Mm-hmm.
And for what? It basically guarantees that Iran is going to further its nuclear ambitions. They're going to step away from the Iran nuclear deal is almost dead anyway. And Trump has effectively killed it. And this doesn't mean that the Iranians are not going to further their nuclear ambitions. It means they're going to escalate them. It's going to speed them up.
Yep.
So you get a more potent Iran, you get more resentment towards the United States, you get an emboldened ISIS, mm-hmm. and you get a recruiting tool for the hardliners all around the region.
Jesus.
So what's the win? Where's the win?
Yeah, there is none. In fact, if you rewind 3 years, you go back to where we were 3 years ago in January of 2017, there was a deal in place. There was a 15-year term, no nuclear weapons development in that 15-year term. And here we are 3 years later, where we don't have that deal. So now a 15-year term has turned into a zero-year term, and now officially so, because Iran, because of Donald Trump, Iran has pulled out of the JCPOA. So that is no longer even a thing anymore. So the very best we can hope for is something that is probably far worse than the JCPOA ever was. And that's what's going to come out of this. And that's the best, again, as I said, that is the best case scenario. That is the absolute best we can wish for. And in fact, what could very well happen is no deal at all. So again, right. Donald Trump has led us through all of this mayhem, all of these steps, as you said, emboldening hardliners, and plus maybe activating terror cells. I mean, we don't know what the Shiite freelancers are going to do, whether it's in the region or internationally. So there's all kinds of downsides to this. Yes, we avoided war. There is not going to be a war this week with Iran. Doesn't mean there's not going to be one a year from now or 6 months from now or whatever.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm curious to know what do you think about the Republican reaction to this. Like, what's your sort of take on it? I'm really eager to. I'm really looking forward to reading your piece later on. But since I can talk to you now about it, I'd love to hear what you think about how the Republicans have responded to this. What's going on in their kind of Republican groupthink?
Well, obviously, it's not as cohesive as it used to be. I mean, it's just strange seeing Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson taking two very different approaches to all of this on Fox News Channel, where Tucker is against everything that's going on, and Sean Hannity wanted to start bombing, 3 days ago. He wanted to start bombing Tehran and hitting the nuclear sites and everything like that. Meanwhile, I don't know if you saw this, Ben, but just before we started chatting today, there was a briefing in a skiff up on the Senate side, where Trump administration officials took all of their alleged intelligence about Soleimani, and we're going to present it to senators. And first of all, Tim Kaine came out and called the evidence a far cry from an imminent threat. But Tim Kaine's reaction wasn't nearly as negative as Rand Paul and Mike Lee, especially Mike Lee, who said that the briefing was probably the worst briefing, at least on a military issue, that he's ever seen.
I didn't see that. Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of an amazing thing there. And that's just showing what's happening here with Donald Trump. Donald Trump thought that this was going to not only keep us from talking about impeachment, but also was going to potentially propel him to victory in November with all kinds of new enthusiasm, with, obviously the commander in chief powers of the presidency are things that can, in fact, as we saw with George W. Bush, can, in fact, propel presidents to a second term. That's not going to happen here. Obviously, the Republicans are split on this. This is a lose for Donald Trump. The only victory in this is, no, we're not at war. But then again, we weren't at war a month ago. So since it's just where we were one month ago.
But yeah, where we were, but a bit worse off. But yeah. Like significant. Yeah. Kind of. We're in a more contentious relationship with Iran. Mm-hmm. And there's volatility in the Middle East. So, yeah, it doesn't baffle me. He's a chaos merchant.
Yeah.
And what I found really interesting was I did find Tucker Carlson's reaction really, really interesting. I wrote a piece about this for the Banter on Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, he had this long screed on Friday about how it was, you know, this is what Washington wants and this is a really dangerous move. And look at all these kind of deranged neocons who are beating their chest for war. But Tucker Carlson, I mean, this was my thought on Tucker Carlson's rant. I think that Tucker Carlson knows that this is very dangerous territory for Trump. I don't think he cares one way or the other about Iranians or anybody who isn't a white American. So Tucker Carlson had this kind of huge kind of, he really, really went after the neocons. But interestingly, he didn't go after Trump. He said that this is all the fault of the neocons around Trump. This is all the fault of the Democrats and the Republican neocons who want to go to war with Iran. But I think he knows that Trump's base, right, it's this new sort of isolationist, nativist base that Trump has tapped into.
Yeah, the non-interventionist libertarian wing of the party.
But kind of like white, they're kind of like ethno-nationalists, you know. So they're concerned about keeping America pure and not getting involved in dirty countries with you know, people with lighter skin than, you know, with darker skin than themselves.
Right.
And I think that Tucker Carlson was trying to basically he was a coded message to Trump saying, don't do this because you're going to lose your base if you do this.
That's exactly damn right. And, you know, it was interesting to hear Donald Trump in this statement as he was standing there delivering these remarks today. He made a point of lying about the original Iran deal, like he always does, right? He was lying about that, the $1.5 billion or whatever amount of money that he was making up, claiming that money was just money that we gave them. And first of all, if that had actually been the case, I want to make perfectly clear the fact that if we had just given Iran $1.5 billion or whatever the amount happens to be, if we had offered them that money to stop developing nuclear weapons, there's nothing outside the realm of normal foreign policy to pay off a nation to do something that we want them to do. But the fact is that we didn't actually pay Iran to do this. There was nothing that was an exchange of cash other than releasing money that was tied up in sanctions, right? This is according to factcheck.org. The nuclear agreement included China, France, Germany, Russia, the UK, the United States, and the EU. So Obama didn't carry out any part of this on his own, first of all. This wasn't America giving money to Iran. The deal did lift some sanctions, which lifted a freeze on Iran's assets that were held largely in foreign, not U.S. banks. And to be clear, the money that was unfrozen belonged to Iran. It had only been made inaccessible by sanctions aimed at crippling the country's nuclear program. Secondly, $150 billion, I guess that was the amount that Donald Trump keeps talking about. $150 billion is a high-end estimate of the total that was freed up after some sanctions were lifted. U.S. Treasury Department estimates put the number at about $50 billion in usable liquid assets, according to a 2015 testimony from Adam Zubin, acting Undersecretary of Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. So there it is. Suck at Donald Trump. None of this really is true, what he keeps saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've come to expect this.
So
now,
obvious,
right? I mean, it's just a nonstop stream of lies that whatever he says, you can't ever take it seriously. But the problem is how it gets filtered through. Yeah, you know, he's not saying it. He's not speaking to us. That's the thing that I find the most kind of difficult to come to sort of come to terms with, with this guy's presidency, is that he simply doesn't care what intelligent, rational, decent people think. He's not talking to us. Right. Anybody listening to this podcast, Donald Trump is not speaking to you.
Nope.
He's speaking to his base always. That's the only people he's talking to. And he's filling, you know, it doesn't matter whether he lies. He can make up anything he wants and they will believe what he says.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll believe it. So this money that, Obama was giving the Iranians is real to them. It was Obama bribing the Iranians. It was Obama using money from American children. He was stealing money from American children.
American children. I love that. That's a really good way to think about it. They're considering it money taken from American children, right?
Right. But it makes no difference whether it's true or not. He knows that he gets the soundbite out. It reverberates around Twitter with all the kind of from lunatics who follow him. Mm-hmm. And then all the impression is created. And then it becomes its own reality. It becomes its own thing. And then, you know, the rest of us are wringing our hands and saying, well, this is a lie. But the damage is already done. Once the lie gets out, damage is done.
We'll get back to our conversation with Ben Cohen here in just a second. But first, everyone's making New Year's resolutions. I've made a couple. But in case you can't think of a good one, here's a suggestion. Resolve to look good in all your social media photos by wiping out all those fine lines, wrinkles, and baggy eyes with Plexiderm. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under eye bags in just a matter of minutes. When I took the test, all I had to do was apply this powerful topical serum to my problem areas, and Lord knows I've got a ton of those, and within 10 minutes, it was a new me. And the best part is there's no surgery or Botox involved. It's all natural. Simply put, I was blown away by the results. Ring in 2020 with confidence, knowing Plexiderm is going to give you smooth, younger looking skin in just minutes. The best part is it goes on clear, so nobody's going to know you're using it. Leave your under eye bags and wrinkles in 2019 with Plexiderm. Go to triplexiderm.com. Use my code SEXYLIBERAL for 50% off. 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code SEXYLIBERAL. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit triplexiderm.com today. Use the code SEXYLIBERAL at checkout. That's triplexiderm.com, code SEXYLIBERAL. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
And the other thing is that the Donald Trump has a superbly twisted view of the American presidency. He's not a guy who spent many years in academia studying the nuances of the Constitution and presidential powers, and no one's really fully prepared to actually be president. There are many, many people who are on deck to become president who have a sense of what the presidency is really all about. Donald Trump doesn't have that. Donald Trump's view of the presidency is one that's been distorted through the prism of Fox News Channel and AM Talk Radio, and to a certain extent, and the internet, but not really. Maybe a little bit of Twitter, but mostly it's Fox News Channel. And so Donald Trump believes that all presidents lie. This is just something presidents do. And everybody assumes that, presidents are going to make shit up. Barack Obama made shit up. George W. Bush made shit up. In fact, Donald Trump thought George W. Bush should have been impeached for lying us into war. He's actually on record on video saying that.
Saying that, right.
Yeah. So he believes this kind of behavior that he's exhibiting is not all that unusual from the behavior of other presidents, whether it's the lying or anything else. He just believes that, I'm well within my right to act however I want to act, because that's how all presidents act. All presidents are unhinged maniacs. All presidents use the madman theory on the international stage, pretending that they're about to bomb someone and they pull back from the brink at the last minute. This is how he looks at the world and looks at his job, and it is eminently twisted. But the damage here isn't in his actual behavior. The damage is in the interpretation of his behavior by his supporters. What he is doing is he is poisoning 40 to 45% of American voters into believing that this is really how it should be done.
And then it's not okay. I mean, I've got a friend of mine who's a Trump supporter, and this is the conversation that kind of I have with him very, very often. Yeah. That, I mean, as you just basically laid out, that Trump is legitimizing lying and making things up on the spot, because all presidents do that. That both sides do this, right? And this is the argument that my Trump supporting friend uses. That he's like, you know, look. All presidents kind of tell mistruths. All presidents make stuff up. You know, it was like
all presidents do quid pro quos with foreign countries. Presidents trade military aid for election help.
That's why they're zeroing in on Hunter Biden. You know, that's why they're saying, look, well, you know, there was a, you know, he was doing all sorts of shady things with Ukraine, and it doesn't matter that, you know, Hunter Biden isn't running for president. Joe Biden isn't president. He technically, not that I agree with a lot of the stuff that Hunter Biden has done. I think I have my issues with that, but I don't think he's done anything illegal at all. They keep trying to create these equivalences, right?
Yeah.
That everything that Trump does that's awful, the Democrats have done something just as bad. And they basically make things up. They make things up to mm-hmm. make it seem like the Democrats are just as bad as Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so to unpack the logic, right, it's like, you know, my friend will point to all these, like, well, what about Hillary Clinton and Benghazi? What about Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation? Mm-hmm. And then you have to go through, you know, the Clinton Foundation and all that nonsense, all the conspiracy theories around the Clinton Foundation. And you have to kind of debunk that. And by the time you've got done debunking the Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation conspiracy theories, you've forgotten what the point was in the first place.
Yeah. Right?
Which is why they've been effective at kind of gaslighting the public. So you get so caught up, they change, you know, the Trump supporters change the subject. So they're all, first of all, we're talking about Trump doing something wrong. Then all of a sudden, I got trapped in a conversation about the Kennedys.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, and after about, you know, 15 minutes, I'm thinking, why am I talking about the goddamn Kennedys? What have they got to do with Donald Trump trying to have a quid pro quo with Ukraine?
What was it, the Chicago thing where Joseph Kennedy got some mob friends to stuff some ballot boxes in Chicago? Yeah, is that what they're talking about? Yeah.
Right. And I got kind of sucked into that. But then after what, I just thought, hold a second, there's no reason for me to be talking about this. We're talking about Donald Trump. So now every time he brings something like this up, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize they were that person was president. Like, I didn't realize that this, you know, Joe Kennedy is president of the United States.
right.
But you have to kind of stay on message. Like, it's like trying to have a debate with Kellyanne Conway. Conway is kind of, he's kind of, that's the sort of, the protocol, right? That's the Trump supporter protocol, is to do the Kellyanne Conway, is to talk about everything other than the issue that you're supposed to be talking about.
Yeah, it's goalpost moving and some of the most insufferable behaviors that you see in like a YouTube commenter. And that's kind of Kellyanne Conway. She's like a Twitter troll. She's just like Donald Trump in that way.
Right. And it makes it incredibly difficult to have a normal discussion about this stuff, because we can have discussions about this stuff internally with other kind of non-Trump supporters and other rational people, but the national conversation now isn't really a national conversation. There is just Trump supporters and then the rest of the country, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of split now between a kind of non-reality and reality. There's a reality-based discussion and a non-reality-based discussion.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the kind of non-reality base it appears to have grown or solidified now. I mean, I think you had Trump. I mean, Fox News kind of laid the foundation for it.
Yeah.
But Trump has come in and kind of dragged it into a completely different, a completely new level.
Yeah.
of unrealness now. Well, that is now that's where they kind of exist.
And it's
unreachable, and it's really sad. But I, you know, my thoughts on this, as soon as Trump appeared, I'm like, okay, this needs to be smashed.
Yeah,
this can't be negotiated with. You can't talk to it. You can't just negotiate. Nothing.
Yeah.
It has to be beaten. Has to be eliminated from. I think it's as who's John McCain's ex campaign.
Oh yeah, Steve Schmidt.
Yeah, exactly. Steve Schmidt basically said he's like the current Republican Party needs to be burned to the ground.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely what needs to happen. Shy of that, I think we can fix all of this shit as long as Donald Trump becomes a point of humiliation to his supporters, where they are suddenly embarrassed to say that they once went to a rally with a red hat on and cheered for Donald Trump. And to me, that's the only way that we're going to rebottle this madness, is if, because you're never going to convince them using facts and logic and reason. That's never going to occur. So all right. That's left is, well, you got fear and embarrassment. I don't know what it is. I mean, do you have any concept whatsoever as to, in terms of what can be done about this guy that will stuff him back into his box once and for all?
You know what, Bob? I was just literally just about to ask you the same question.
Yeah, because I don't know. That's my answer.
Any idea what that could be? I mean, my inkling is that there is nothing.
Yeah.
That could happen to the guy that would shame his supporters anymore. Mm. And I think that he has to, it, like, a victory against this guy is going to be really messy. It's going to be really difficult.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really messy, and it's not going to be as complete as we hope it's going to be. That he gets beaten through a mass organization, through very, very disciplined. Whoever becomes the nominee has to be extremely well funded, extremely well organized. The Democrats have to get there. The party has to really shift into gear and get pump as much money and organizers and media campaigns as they can into the swing states. And they have to grind out a victory against this guy. It has to be ground out, literally doorstep by doorstep. Right, voter by voter has to, take the presidency away from this guy.
That's right,
and I think that's the only way really to beat him. You know, and it's through the ballot. You know, it's getting rid of the Republicans in the Senate. Hopefully, the Democrats can have a chance of. I think they do have a reasonable chance of flipping the Senate.
Yeah,
but that comes down to mass organization. You know, so and that's really the only way to beat this guy.
Yeah,
and once he's beaten. Then he's a loser, right?
Right.
That helps. You know, that helps.
That's a really good way to look at it, because I think a catastrophic election loss for Donald Trump this year would go a long way toward that humiliation. It wouldn't be ultimately the humiliation that makes him skulk off the stage and go away forever. But I think it'll be enough to start to winnow that crowd of red hats and say, well, you know, I didn't really like him in the first place, because they see that he's really not all about winning. He's just really a whiny bastard who's ultimately a loser and who wouldn't have won in the first place if he hadn't received Russian help.
Yeah, and I also think that, he should go to jail and there should be no presidential pardon.
Yep.
If a Democrat wins, then no Democrat should pardon him.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he's still in serious shit. There are a lot of investigations happening, continuing investigations going into serious wrongdoings. I think, in the Southern District of New York, that could land him in jail.
Yeah.
And good. You know, he should go to jail.
Right.
He should go to jail for what he's done. And everybody around him who enabled him should go to jail.
Yeah. And along those lines, I've been saying on the show for a while now that he's opened that possibility himself. And I'm not just talking through his crimes. I'm talking about opening up the political tradition, the presidential tradition now, that it once was that presidents don't investigate previous presidents until Donald Trump. Trump has decided in this past year, I forget exactly when this started, but I think it was sometime around maybe midsummer or so, certainly within Bill Barr's term as attorney general, that we're now going to investigate the Obama administration. And we're going to use this guy, John Durham in Connecticut, to investigate the Obama administration for their Russia investigation. We're going to investigate the investigators.
I don't think the Democrats should be cautious whatsoever about using power. Mm. I think one of the fundamental mistakes that the Democrats make when it comes to dealing with Republicans that and Trump that it's about power, right? That the Republicans care only about power. Mitch McConnell cares only about power. Donald Trump cares only about power, right? So they will do things. They will smash conventions. They will completely rip up the rule book and do whatever they want because they can.
Yeah.
You know, they can ram through Supreme Court nominees because they can, right? You know, Mitch McConnell blocked Obama's nominee. Because he could, because it was clearly an abuse of power, but he had the power and he abused it. And I think that the Democrats need to be very, very cognizant of this going forward, and that they should basically give Republicans a dose of their own medicine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's the precedent now. Thanks, Mitch McConnell.
It's a game of power, and whoever is in power then gets to make the rules. So now the Democrats, if they can get themselves elected, should have absolutely no qualms whatsoever about doing exactly what the Republicans did to them. Do it, you know, definitely do it legally, but don't, feel bad for 1 second.
Yeah.
About, you know, inflicting as much damage on the Republican Party as possible.
That's right.
And ensuring that they can't get elected again. Mm-hmm. You know, there are many steps that they can take to, when it comes to gerrymandering. There's lots of things that they can do with Trump, you know, all the conservative judicial appointments. I say, you know, this is war. Like, it's a war, and the Democrats have got to treat it as such.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And in fact, Mitch McConnell has established new rules for that war, which is to eliminate the filibuster. So, you know, once the Democrats, and it's very likely that the Democrats could in November not only win the presidency but win back the Senate and keep the House, putting them in a position to be able to push through a bunch of their own judicial nominees as well as whoever else, Supreme Court nominees and so on, without any concerns about a Republican filibuster of those things. It's again, a precedent established by Mitch McConnell is going to screw Mitch McConnell. I wanted to change gears just a little bit here and talk about something that I observed on Facebook in the last 24, 48 hours. I want to get your reaction to this. I had to issue a warning on my Facebook page, on my Facebook wall, specifically to my Facebook friends, not to post memes in my comments that wish for Iranian counterattacks against Trump and his properties. Now, mind you, obviously, I'm no fan of Donald Trump. I think my record is pretty damn strong on being opposed to Donald Trump, on my disgust with Donald Trump's presidency, with him as a human being, with everything that is surrounding him. However, I think even if it's intended as a joke, it's bad form to publicly go on to especially someone else's Facebook page, and to start fantasizing openly about the death of Donald, hoping that one of our enemies attacks and kills our president, or attacks and destroys one of his properties on American soil. It just seems like that's just offering every damn red hat, every Fox News Channel pundit, wide open excuse to say that we're irrational maniacs wishing for the assassination of our own president on American soil. It's just, it's a bad idea. And I just wanted to elaborate that a little more here on the show. Feel free to scream and fantasize about Donald Trump, but don't give the other side an excuse to play the victim. We know these people love to play the victim. No one loves to play the victim more than Donald Trump and his disciples. And this sort of thing will, and I'm talking specifically about, I know there was one meme at least where there was a map of Florida with arrows pointing to Mar-a-Lago saying, hit here, Iran, do this right here, attack them. And I'd say, no, I've got to delete this shit. This is bad form. Don't do it. Don't do it. It makes us look really bad. Is that, was I way off base with that, or is that probably a good policy to have?
I think you're completely spot on about that. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, the Iranians getting involved in potentially hacking the election, you know, in favor of the Democrats, right? It's like, no, you can't support that, right?
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, I support that. That would be great, you know, get the Iranians to help the Democrats. It's like, you know what? No, because you can't have a double standard, right? You can't be opposed to Russian interference in the election because it was against your person, against your preferred candidate, and then before it when it's, you know, it's a principle, right? That matters, you know, and we've got to, I think that, you know, to beat Donald Trump, you have to, like, it's like Obama, right? I think Obama won against Hillary Clinton and he won against John McCain because he genuinely did. He rose above the fray, right? He had a lot of dignity. He didn't get involved in the kind of like the nastiness and the pettiness. He won because of that, because he held onto his principles. And I think that we got to do that. Right. Yeah. I'm not saying don't fight the guy. I'm not saying don't do everything you can in your power to beat this guy and ensure Democrats get elected. But it doesn't mean that you become as bad as him.
Right.
Or become as bad as his supporters, you know. And like, yeah, like I'm not going to say I wouldn't necessarily be sad about Donald Trump if someone assassinated Donald Trump. I wouldn't necessarily lose much sleep over it. But I think it would be appalling and I wouldn't support. Yeah. Wouldn't support it at all.
Right, right.
You know, it's not something that any decent person should want to get behind.
Whatever happens will happen. We don't need to encourage that shit to happen. Oh, I mean, wish for him. I mean, fine. Wish for him to do to all kinds of terrible things to happen for him privately, but just don't do it under my name. That's all I'm asking for. And that's also to say that it's also bad form. But I don't want to be associated with that because I don't want to get sucked in. I don't want someone, you know, it's very easy to get into a debate on social media, as you know, as we all know. And you get into these heated discussions on Twitter or what have you. And then suddenly someone goes, oh, look at this Facebook status where you let this commenter say something horrible about assassinating Donald Trump. And look at you. You're terrible. And then you have to walk that back. And that's just from the practical social media point of view, on top of just the, this is not how we're supposed to operate. Think about it all you want. Do whatever you want on your own Facebook page. Risk getting banned from Facebook or whatever in the process. But just, again, don't do it on,
not on your page. Yeah, no, I get it completely. And I have a kind of very pretty strict policy about that myself. if people start talking about that kind of stuff, I don't engage with it or delete the comments. Well, just because you just don't want to be associated with that type of, you know, you don't want to get down into that kind of Twitter troll or that, you know, the nastiness that can happen when you get into these debates. It can get personal really, really quickly. And it detracts from the point, it detracts from your kind of your own standing as well, and makes you less credible as a person to listen to, who's, you know, to take your opinion seriously, you know?
But I mean, speaking of Facebook though, I don't know if you saw this story, because I know you've been following Facebook closely from a very similar perspective as I have, which is one of disgust, just perpetually disgusted by Facebook. But they, in one of their most recent decisions, they've decided to ban deepfakes, which is, I think, a positive move. But what they're doing is they're going to continue to allow deepfakes in political ads. The one area where they really need to crack down on deepfakes, because there's a strong potential that deepfakes are going to be exploited by foreign trolls to interfere with the election, et cetera, et cetera. There's going to be all kinds of controversies that are going to arise based on deepfake videos. You can see it coming down Main Street, but Facebook is allowing it to continue with politics.
Facebook is the worst. They are, I definitely welcome that. Not allowing the use of deepfakes, but obviously the caveat, obviously the blatant caveat there is that it's still okay in political ads, which is ridiculous. I mean, I got to applaud Twitter for this one, because Twitter banned all political advertising. I think that was a really responsible move.
Yeah.
And I think that the big danger going with this election is, again, it's social media, right? That's the weak spot. That's where all this disinformation can spread.
Mm-hmm.
And the deepfake, it's really alarming. The technology is like, you couldn't tell. Some of these videos, you really couldn't tell. If you didn't know anything about politics and you saw some of these deepfakes, you would assume that they were real.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's really, really worrying, because a lot of the people who go out who don't, you know, the most, it's the independents, right? The people that I worry about the most are the independents. And the independents, if you're still an independent at this point in time, you're probably not that bright. I hate to say that. Or you're not that politically aware,
yeah,
right? Put it that way, or you're not that educated about politics. Uh-huh. So you're extremely vulnerable to manipulation,
right.
So the kind of the people who, all the Trump supporters, you look at the deepfakes, you know, it doesn't really matter, right? But the independents who look at this stuff, those are who I worry about. Mm. And I think that social media kind of has a responsibility. These platforms have a responsibility to cut that out, particularly when it comes to something as important as, you know, the election of the biggest democracy in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, ultimately, it's going to come down to these platforms self-policing, and hopefully they'll do what they need to do before there are all kinds of federal regulations handed down censoring the internet, which I'm opposed to that eventuality. Yeah. So I hope Twitter, I hope Facebook, I hope all the platforms continue to crack down, although I'm less and less confident in Facebook's ability to do that. But I mean, with deepfakes, the amazing thing is, when it's well done and done for entertainment purposes, it's a lot of fun to look at. I mean, I was just looking at a video on YouTube the other day and just dying laughing. It was a deepfake of George Lucas and Harrison Ford talking about just things about Star Wars. And it was done by Collider. And it was one of the funniest, most effective uses of deepfakes I'd ever seen, because they got a couple of guys, one guy doing an impression of George Lucas, another guy doing an impression of Harrison Ford, and then they deepfaked the faces to look exactly like Harrison Ford and George Lucas. So it really looks like these guys are hamming it up about Star Wars. And it's so damn funny. But at the same time, I'm looking at this and I'm going, oh my God, this could be a disaster. Like, I could totally see someone using deepfakes to create a PP tape and then sending that PP tape out. All of the left goes crazy and we all start sharing the alleged PP tape. And then suddenly, you know, James O'Keefe pops out and goes, ha ha, got you. That was a deepfake, you stupid, stupid liberals. And then we all look like idiots. I can totally see that scenario. And that's one of the more mild scenarios I can imagine. There's a lot worse that they could do.
It really is pretty scary, isn't it? I mean, it's you know, the future of online media,
right?
Manipulation and propaganda and politics. It's how all these kind of overlap. It's really terrifying, and I think that the tech companies, you know, but I don't know if they can be trusted to stay ahead of the manipulators. It's kind of like cheating in sports, right? It's like
like with doping. Yeah, with doping, it's like the dopers are like 10 steps ahead of the regulators.
Way ahead of the regulators, you know. And So significant resources. I mean, I think that unless they get their act together, they really should be regulated heavily.
Yeah.
I know it kind of sucks. It kind of goes against the whole freedom of the internet thing. But what's happened over the past, what happened in 2016 with Brexit and with, the election of Donald Trump, I mean, that was a serious media crisis. That was basically, first of all, you had the collapse of the old media system. Mm-hmm. The internet kind of destroyed the old media system. And then it replaced it with these kind of, I think there was a kind of a golden era maybe of blogs from sort of 2004 to 2008.
Yeah.
But then after that, it went downhill pretty spectacularly quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, along those lines, we know obviously kind of what's led us to this point of the banter becoming a newsletter. And a lot of it has to do with Facebook. Facebook has decimated online publications, not just the Daily Banter, but many, many others, and many of them much larger than the Daily Banter. And because of Facebook's greed and Facebook's ridiculous algorithm, there's not only a glut of unemployed political writers looking for work, making it difficult for anyone to get hired because it's an employer market where, you know, there's just so many people just waiting for work, just in a long, long line, a long bread line, so to speak. But then on top of that, Facebook's algorithm drove all of these publications out of business. And now I'm just curious in terms of what you think of the newsletter model that you've moved the banter over to now. How's that platform working out for you? How is the newsletter model working?
I mean, I think it's great. I absolutely love it. it's a huge relief for me. I mean, it was really, really hard when we moved off. I really had a hard time giving up the main platform. But, there was a sort of a slow takeover, really, of content, of what we built in the beginning, which is slowly taken over by Google and Facebook, where all of your traffic came from Google or Facebook, and all of the monetization came from Google or Facebook. So they control the distribution and they control the monetization.
Yeah.
So they essentially, you work for Google and Facebook basically, and not for yourself. And ultimately, when Facebook then decided, right, okay, we are going to destroy your distribution capabilities almost overnight. Mm-hmm. It was just a reminder. We always knew how vulnerable we were to this kind of stuff, but it was okay because you could kind of ride out these algorithm changes and fluctuating ad rates. But the fall was so dramatic in 2018, the end of 2017 and beginning of 2018, that it was just devastating and thank God for this new platform, or Substack, which is a really genius email newsletter platform that basically gives us a really, really beautiful publishing system and website that publishes direct to email. We've got the website version, and then but that website version goes straight out on email too. No advertising, no Google, no Facebook, no nothing. We just reach our most committed readers by email. Mm-hmm. And you read the email, there's like, it's just the banter. It's just what we want to say rather than what we're not trying to use headlines to game Facebook, the Facebook news feed, or for SEO. I couldn't give a shit about SEO or writing a headline that plays well on Facebook now. It's just writing the best content that we can, the best stuff that we can. And having a way more kind of intimate relationship with readers than we ever have, and not having these giant tech companies have anything to do with it whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely I remember when back in the good old days when I Chez would call me up, and I had to talk him off a ledge because one of his articles hadn't played well on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because he got addicted. You can get addicted to the clicks.
Right. Oh my God! And there were so many clicks. I just interject here real quick. man, before, I would say up until late 2013, you would post something on Facebook, a link to an article that you wrote, and the traffic was just seemingly endless. The potential for traffic was seemingly endless. And then they started burying outside links so that we'd be encouraged to pay for the same reach that we used to get for free before, right?
Yeah, and also with no sort of any no real information on what the algorithm change was, and how, you know, how we didn't really understand how it worked, and there would be people who claimed they knew how it worked, social media experts who claimed knew. Some of them did, but I would suspect most of them didn't.
Yeah,
understand anything? You know, they had no idea. More than it was, you kind of rolling the dice. Like it's like, what's going to play well on Facebook? Mm-hmm. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? What's your content strategy on Facebook? I don't know. We're going to try some stuff. You know, I mean, I think some of the most popular stuff on that played for the banter was things that, you know, were written in a cut in like 10 minutes and put out.
Yes, much to my chagrin. It always seemed like the shit that I'd throw together in a couple of minutes with like 300 words would suddenly take off. And then I would spend, and this was Chez's lament too. Like he would spend like 3 days working on a long think piece and he would put it up and then it would get no traffic. And then he'd post a video the same day with 300 words in there. And then suddenly it would go bananas. was the shitty aspect of that situation.
Yeah, and I think that system, like as much as you know, we had a lot of fun back in those days, but I think it also didn't necessarily encourage the best content. You know,
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I really really love the email publishing platform because it. You know, I think it encourages the right kind of content, at least what I like to write about these days.
Yeah.
You know, I think like we've sort of evolved as a media outlet over the years where, you know, there's a lot of outrage back in the day and you know, snarky writing. And I think it's, you know, now's the time to be a bit more thoughtful.
Yeah.
A bit more kind of calm in the approach, and really take our time with pieces and research them properly and not try to crank them out as quickly as we can.
Yeah.
I can only speak for myself, but it kind of suits my evolved position on journalism and on the media, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm so there with you because it was, it's always been difficult for me to write headlines that were, I don't know, click-worthy. Like, I had a hard time writing clickbait headlines. Or just like, I understood what it took. I just couldn't. You know, like, there's some words and some television shows and some kinds of music that you just can't bring yourself to wrap your head around it. You just, your brain, your emotions, everything doesn't let you do it. Well, that was the way I'm still that way. So I'm immensely grateful for this kind of platform where it's more about the thoughtfulness and the information and the facts than it is about, well, how do I get the maximum number of people to click on this headline?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember that always with you would always be telling me, you were like, you know, look, I want to take my time with this piece and I don't feel comfortable with this headline. And you know, it was like equally, I was equally frustrated and had so much respect for like you're sticking to your principles. And I'm like, yeah, but look, we need to put it on Facebook and I fucking hate Facebook. Well, we got to do it. And you're like, no, not comfortable with this. And, you know, ultimately, I think that your approach was the right one, and now is, you know, and that's how we're operating going forward. Maybe you know, I've evolved, you know, I've evolved over time to come to where you were 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understood the reasoning behind it, and I really, really did. And I respected the reasoning behind it because it's a competitive field, and there are a lot of things flooding the internet, flooding social media, and you have to stand out. And it's why sabotage yourself by putting out a headline that is not going to get any views? Why write something if no one's going to look at it? It seems counterproductive to me. So in that respect, I totally get. Well, my problem is having come up from an era in which I used to have to literally measure column inches to paste up, you know, like an old school newspaper using, you know, like hot wax and strips of paper. That's how we used to do it. And then we used to have to use actual math to calculate the length of the headline, you know, shit like that. And that's just kind of how I'm wired. It's not that I was necessarily opposed to writing attractive headlines. I just couldn't do it. It just wasn't in my DNA.
Right. But I think that there's something to be said for the old school craft, of creating real stories with headlines that are kind of informative and not necessarily, you know, not misleading, not trying to grab your attention. You know, it's not kind of like the National Enquirer, you know, and really having a kind of honest relationship with your readers, and that and that to me is more important now than anything. You know, it's more important that we built this trust and we built something that like we're all kind of proud of, as opposed to something that, you know, when BuzzFeed came on the scene, it was I mean, they really changed the game. BuzzFeed changed the game, and I think that, you know, I was
and Gawker, BuzzFeed and Gawker,
yeah, just horrified by what they were doing, because it changed the game for everybody else. And you're like, oh my God, okay, this is what's happening. Mm. You can't really argue against it, because that's what's happening. But it's not good. It's not healthy.
Right.
And I think that we did I think at the Banter, we did a pretty good job of, we did not succumb to the buzz feedification of content.
No, we didn't. No. Everything was done a little bit differently at the Daily Banter, and I think in the best possible ways, especially after I've been around and seen up close how some other publications operated. Yeah, we had it down, I think. And we may not have been the biggest of the publishing websites, politics websites, but I think we were one of the best. I think we had some of the best content going on. And now the same goes for the Banter at Substack, the newsletter version of it. I think there's some wonderful content in there. And, you know, again, there's a risk and an attraction to doing things that don't necessarily jive with your own integrity. You know, it's very easy to sell yourself out doing publishing online, but you never did that. And I don't think the Daily Banter ever did that.
No, now moving forward with, you know, the Banter on Substack, I think that like this sets us on a really good path. You know, look, and the proof is that it's growing. Our subscriber base is just growing. It's month after month after month after month. It's not we're not having explosive growth, but we're having sustained growth. And I think that is about, because we're just, you know, we're doing what we love doing, and we're doing it in a way that is sustainable to us as well, like mentally. I mean, I was completely burnt out by 2018. I was just done, really. I was completely shattered by the whole experience and the kind of nonstop publishing schedule that we set for ourselves. Yeah. It was too much, and I wasn't enjoying it anymore. And I think now I'm enjoying it. I'm really, really enjoying it.
That's great. So great to hear. The website is thebanter.substack.com. Ben Cohen, thank you so much for coming on today, especially on short notice. Really appreciate it, my friend.
Of course, Bob. Thank you so much, man. And a big shout out to all the listeners as well. Bob, your audience is amazing. I interact with a lot of them on Facebook.
Awesome.
And a real honor to be on the show.
Thanks so much, my friend. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye-bye.
A new year. It's the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. but finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/begin makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to more than 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes and finds people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlighting the top candidates so you never miss a great match. It's so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/begin. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEGIN. ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.